Hi, welcome back to Attention Recession. I'm Nicola.
Hello.
And I'm here with Jazz.
Hi.
Before we get started on the episode, I want to say thanks to everyone who's listened so far. We've been at this for a little over 4 months, and it's so cool to see
what
followers. Yeah. Our first episode was in December.
Oh my God. This year is flying by.
I know.
I can't believe that. Wow.
So yeah, it's wonderful just to see more people following on Spotify and Apple and more plays every week. So that's wonderful. And we just added a way you can support us. So there's a link in the episode description that says support this podcast. It will take you to a page where you can do, I think, a one-time or a recurring donation of $1, $5, or $10. It's very easy. You can do it with Apple Pay and I'm sure other ways. But we love making the show and we want to be able to put as much of ourselves into it as possible. So any financial support, very much appreciated. That of the way, we have Allegra Frank today, my friend and an entertainment editor at the Daily Beast. Hi, Allegra.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys.
Yay, so happy to have you here. We have so much to talk about. You just got back from South by Southwest, so that will be, I'm sure, very rich.
I have many a story.
And we've had lots of, lots of entertainment topics to cover.
Yeah,
but
Allegra, I'd love to know a little bit about, like, your background. Like, this is my first time meeting you, and I think it's, I don't know, your job sounds very cool. I'd love to hear more about it and how you got into it.
I'm trying to, like, recognize that it is cool because I've been doing this for a long time, and now it's very much just like feeling like a job, whereas when I started it was definitely a cool thing. So basically I've been in journalism media for the last going on 9 years. I started like fresh out of college in 2015. First I was just interested in, like, I had studied film studies in college, which really was just like watching movies and then saying a lot of pretentious crap about them, like nothing actually material or useful. But I liked writing, and I had done some journalism, like mostly in high school. And I was trying to figure out like how to get into film, but what does that really mean? And I was also like, can I get writing into this? Like, what is trying to get into screenwriting involve? So I ended up finding this job on this website I liked, because I also just like read a lot of blogs. Like, I really loved like Gawker and Jezebel and that whole thing. So one of those sort of similar sites, which was Polygon, which was a video game site related to Racked and Eater, just part of that whole family, was posting jobs for news writers, like the most entry-level job. And I love video games and read that site a lot. And I was just like, oh, it would be cool to get an interview with these people I read all the time. But not really thinking much else of it, because I was like, I'm going to try and do film. And like, but it would just be cool, like, just to meet these people. But then somehow that worked out, I guess because I was charming and all the other writers were not good enough. I don't know. But
no, that's so true. Writers are, especially like
not.
Journalism people, are off-putting. They are off-putting people.
Yeah, especially in video game journalism. It's like,
oh my God, you can know? Only imagine.
Like, very socially awkward, very, I mean, nerdy's cool, but, like, just can't really hold a conversation and just stare at you way too long, like that kind of thing. just a lot of awkward eye contact. So, yeah, so that was my first job, and ever since then, I rode that wave. I went from very specifically video games to, like, broader entertainment, because I always wanted to cover film or do something with film, especially. So, yeah, I moved from Polygon to Vox, where I was doing culture. So I've also been interested in, like, communities, like, internet communities, forums, social media, just sort of how people connect online. So I sort of roped that in. And from Vox, I moved to Slate. And from Slate, I moved to the Daily Beast, where now I mostly do entertainment. We don't do as much of the larger cultural stuff, which maybe we'll talk about, but that's part of where why I'm in an existential crisis. But mostly I'm covering film and TV and celebrities, I guess I would say.
Before we got on, I asked your permission if I could bring up something from your close friend's story a while ago, where you were like, went on your last day at Polygon, someone came up to you, like, in person, like, off the street, and was like, your writing, like, means so much to me, or something. Like, something meaningful happened, basically. And yeah. Then, like, today, you're, like, editing listicles about, like, the new Mean Girls, something or other. And I felt for you so much, because I've also been in media for a similar amount of time. Kind of interestingly, yeah, I was, like, wanting to be in fashion, and then wound up, because I read all these fashion blogs, I wound up working for one of them and then became a writer that way, and also am now just like in more broad like culture or whatever. And I also like, yeah, I like, I used to write like kind of meaningful stuff. Like I used to like have something to say, and like I used to like it's weird. Like I look back at some of my past work and I'm like, okay, girl. But then I look at what I do today and I'm just like, oh my God. And there was a while where I really like, it fucked with me hard. And I'm at such an acceptance state now that I just want to stay at the acceptance state. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it rocks my world because I'm just like, damn, could have been somebody. But like, the like environment, like as someone who needed to choose jobs based on what pays best, like couldn't really ride out you know, doing what I wanted at $350 an article, like couldn't make that work. So here we are.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I feel like your shift is like mine is sort of, you know, even though at Polygon I was definitely doing things I cared for, not that I don't care, but things that really spoke to me more and where I felt sort of this like more emotional and professional personal investment, versus now it's sort of like, this is the job and I have fun with it and I do still care, but also there are the things that I really don't care about, which are the listicles or the things where it's like business, the business department says we have to do this. I feel like your shift is like, you started out at RACT, or I met you when you were at RACT, and now working at People, I feel like you're doing something a lot more different from what you started doing versus me, where I still am like kind of engaging with a similar sort of thing, but it's more like the media industry has changed, and so that's affected what I do, versus I feel like your job trajectory is really interesting to me, because I feel like you've done a lot of different things to end up here.
Yeah, the through line for me is like shopping and fashion and commerce, because I started out like working at a direct-to-consumer company at Warby Parker. That was my first job out of college. And then I started working at RACT, and then I was writing like about shopping and commerce and companies and trends in that. And so like being a little bit more, on the journalist, like reporter side, and then going into freelance and doing that. And then taking a lot of like copywriting work. So I was kind of like more back on the like actual selling side of that work. And then kind of bouncing back now into this new world of commerce, where it's like halfway between editorial and copywriting. So it's weird because it's almost like my career, like I have struggled a lot with like understanding it. But it's almost like it's starting to make more sense to me, but it still doesn't. And I don't know. I'm just kind of like, I'm just trying to, I'm at a acceptance. Just, you know, I pay my rent, whatever. It's fine. It's all fine.
Yeah. I'm trying to get to that too. It's obviously very hard, which is why I'm sad posting a lot about it. It's definitely, I feel like for me, because it was like, I started out kind of not even meaning to be here, just getting really lucky. Like my first job was at one of my favorite websites and I wanted to work there because I loved the writers there. And then suddenly they were my managers and like teaching me how to do this. I feel like I just lucked out so quickly, like the first thing I did.
Same.
Yeah, exactly. So then it's like nothing's going to be that good.
I got a lucky break and like I knew I had it good. I didn't know how fucking good I had it.
Mm-hmm.
And falling from there hurt hard. And so now I'm just trying to, acceptance. Ooh, and I hope I would love to get back there in my life, but with the way that I don't know. I give it up to God.
do you guys?
I'm done pushing. I'm like trying to just like, my strategy now is just to put more of myself like out there, like doing this podcast, whatever, doing more writing, just doing more stuff, putting myself out there and then hoping that things like come back to me instead of trying to like force something to happen that isn't happening.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Do you guys think it's like when you're that young and like fresh out of college, you're able to like afford to do the cool jobs because like I think a lot of us know it's like some of these really cool companies, like they don't pay that much because everyone wants to work there so they can get away with having like a really low salary. Whereas if you're writing for like a medical device company, it's like, yeah, they'll pay you a lot because it's not like glamorous. Do you think that's kind of what has like led to this? That like, yeah, when you're young, you can take like a $20,000 a year job. But like once you get older, you're like, that's just not the reality anymore.
That's a good question because I do feel like my choices are more guided by the amount of money I could make. Now, because like this is the Daily Beast is the fourth place I've worked. And in 9 years, somehow to me, that feels like a lot, but maybe it's really not. But each time I've left, the last two places I've worked, Slate and Daily Beast, were very much, it was motivated by like, I'm interested in doing more. I like new challenges, but it was also like, I know I'm not going to leave if I don't get paid a good amount more, like at least $10,000 more. Like, I'm not going to just leave for less than that. Versus when I started, yeah, it was very much like I was still living at home, so I didn't have to worry about that part as much. That was like very lucky. I was very privileged to have that. But it was like, yeah, I have this expectation that I'm not going to make a ton of money, and this definitely doesn't pay a lot, but it also sounds super cool. So I can take it didn't really feel like a risk. Like, it felt like this is sort of what I have to do, like take the most entry level job and doesn't really matter how much it makes. Although I had another job offer actually that same exact day. I got two job offers, but the other one was going to be at like an advertising agency or something, and it was slightly less pay. So actually in some way, because advertising seemed kind of cool, so I was kind of like, if they had paid me more, maybe I would have taken that too. But I think now I have more bills and more understanding of like, oh, I need to be paid more. Like, I make, you know, 60 something thousand more than I made 8 years ago. And I think a lot of that is because I'm very intentional about that. I think it's really important as I get older to be making more money. But sometimes that means sacrificing the fun stuff that we could get away with because they weren't paying us anything. So they were like, kind of, you do what you want because I'm not paying you anything anyway.
It's also just the landscape has changed so much in digital media. Like, it's only been more layoffs, you know, more titles closing, more mergers. Like, when we started working, we were there for like a nice little fat era of cash. Like, there was some money. And then basically, like, social media advertising was like what killed that cash, because why would Nike do a buyout of like the website with like banner ads when they could target hyper specifically for a fraction of the cost on Instagram or whatever. So the money left. We got to be there for a nice time or some kind of ridiculous things happened. It honestly was a bit of a glory era. Like, it was pretty fun. And that's part of why I feel like I'm able to like let it go, is like when I think about it through that light where I'm like, it's just not what it was. Like, there's no going back to like too many too many things have happened. There's no going back to what that was. Not in this environment. So I don't know. I have a warm memory of it, and I don't know. It's just not that anymore. But yeah, it definitely has always run on the digital media has always run on 23-year-olds being paid nothing. Like,
and yeah, it still, it's for just, sure.
Yeah,
the whole country like, runs on 23-year-olds. 23-year-olds being paid nothing.
No, and I get so pissed because I'll like read like a dazed like culture article, and I'm like, this is so bad. This person doesn't understand anything. They have no historical knowledge. And then I go look them up on Instagram, and they're like, oh, because they're 23. Like, of course they don't know anything. Like, it should be illegal for them to write this article.
But at 23, you feel so old and so smart.
Oh my God, yeah. It's so interesting too, though, because so every place I've worked at is like unionized, and that's awesome. So, and I'm very involved with like the unions, and so I see
I've
like
never had that.
Oh yeah, you left right before the union drive at Vox Media. I've been very involved with all that stuff, so I'm like part of those conversations about like what should be the salary minimums for each tier, and like what do the tiers look like. And so now I'm seeing that the 23-year-olds on the bottom, their entry level is $20,000 more than I was making. And uh-oh. I think I was more talented than they were and doing more. But, and it's like, I'm obviously very happy for them, but it's really interesting to see like the work I was doing is now worth $20,000 more. And they're complaining about it. And it's like, you know, I was living in Brooklyn making $20,000 less than you and thinking that was awesome and, you know, scrimping and saving and not like eating all of my meals at the office and not complaining. And now you're making some cases, some people like 24-year-olds are making $30,000 more than I was making. And I'm very happy for them. But it's definitely if the 24-year-olds are making $70,000 and thinking that's so little, it's just like, oh, God, like, that's just scary about the economy. I'm like, that sounds awesome to me as a 23-year-old, 24-year-old.
Yeah, because, like, yeah. I mean, expenses have just gotten so much different since then. Like, now I know in L.A., $100,000 salary is considered, like, low middle class, even, like, upper. You know what I mean? It's just, like, and I think $70,000 in L.A. is considered still in poverty, which is like so crazy. So yeah, so much has changed. But Allegra, I was really curious about something you mentioned earlier, kind of talking about how just like the media and TV industry has changed so much since you started, and like that has made your work look a lot different. I would love to hear more about what that has looked like.
Yeah, I mean, I think TV and film are sort of in the same position as media, I think. It's like ad space is so important, and advertisers are finding new ways to make money, like more direct to consumer, I think. Like, you know, having social media and paying the 23-year-olds to just do the work as opposed to paying millions of dollars for ads. So I feel like the film and TV that we're covering is, you know, so much more different, and the things that we're like expected to cover, obviously there's still so many things like made on so many different budgets, but you know, it's so much harder for us to justify covering the very, very small thing that was made for no money, and the advertisers aren't able to do much advertising for it, both themselves or like to us. Like, they're, those studios are never going to buy ad space on our website. Not that we cover things because those people are buying stuff, but it's like that's less visible to us. So it's harder for me to argue, like, even though I really like the small movie I just saw, it's harder for me to argue that it's worth covering because I know no one else has seen it, or it's just not going to get much of a push. And back in the day, like, that would be awesome. It's like, oh, we want to do recommendations, we want to spotlight smaller art, like indie stuff, but and whatever, like, maybe people will just take it and thank us for the recommendation, and maybe it won't do a ton of numbers, but, like, you know, the intent is good. But now it's like, okay, this new indie movie we all thought was going to be hype, it made XYZ at the box office, which isn't enough, so we're not even going to touch it anymore. Like, it's just not worth it. And it doesn't matter if we all thought it was really good, it's just, like, readers aren't, they don't care, they're not seeing it. A lot of these things are only in New York and LA anyway, so they can't see it.
Wow.
Or it's on streaming and it's like well, it came out last week and now the bigger thing is out this week, so no one cares anymore. And it makes it feel more narrow and repetitive in a lot of ways, because, you know, I used to just do little blogs about all random kinds of things, and now I feel like I'm sort of expected to do like Mean Girls, like 70 pieces on Mean Girls, because that's very well known and there's a new movie out and we can expect that readers will maybe click, although that listicle I had to edit that of the most fetch lines from Mean Girls did not do that well. So I was like, I spent 3 hours on this stupid listicle and it got like 4,000 page views, like, you know, so it's also kind of unpredictable at the same time. But it kind of makes it
less it sucks creative. Because you can no longer there's no room for taste making because you're just feeding the audience back what they already like. So it's like you don't even need an algorithm because we have to just do that, be the algorithm for them.
We can talk about South By. I'd love to hear about how that was this year and some movies that you saw, what your overall thoughts were.
Yeah, so I went to South By. This is my second South By. I was there last year. That's one thing that's like a perk of the job, so I can't complain too much. I've never been sent to a film festival before, so this is very cool. And we saw a bunch of movies. They have like smaller movies and then the headliners. So we saw most of the headliners for the 5 days we were there, including Ryan Gosling, who I love. This was right after the Oscars. And he was there for The Fall Guy, which is coming out in May, which is like this stuntman rom-com, which was very fun. There was Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal, which is a remake of this movie with Patrick Swayze, Roadhouse. And it's like an action movie, kind of. It's like basically a superhero movie because he's just like a bouncer who cannot die and is beating everyone up. And then they had the new Dev Patel movie, his first directorial, and he wrote it, he directed it, and it was like a lot of people were raving about it because it is trying to do a lot, but it was doing far too much, is my take. It was just trying to be like political and religious and an action movie, but the first hour was no action and then the last hour was over the top gore, and it was not good. But what I had mentioned to you, Nicola, was that those three movies, which were like among the biggest movies there, were like all about, a lot of the people at South By are dudes, obviously, that's just how film critics are, and it was like dudes who are taking their shirts off and like parading around with their shirts off. Like, it's almost like they don't need to be shirtless while they're killing Conor McGregor with wood, like stabbing him in the chest, you know, but they're flaunting their insane muscles and all the guys in the audience are cheering them. Like, no, women are not responding to this. Like, the guys, like when Dev Patel takes his shirt off.
I'm a little horny.
I know, it's like, yeah, the women, maybe it's just because there weren't a lot of us, but my friends and I were not cheering, but like the guys were going crazy when Dev Patel took his shirt off, and I just thought that was so interesting because that wouldn't happen for a Marvel movie. Like, no one's cheering when Chris Evans shows up with his shirt off, but all of the guys were so excited when Ryan Gosling was shirtless, and I thought that was such an interesting phenomenon.
I think it's because it feels like masculinity feels forbidden right now, and it's like libidinal, you know? And so people are like cheering like from deep inside of something that like feels repressed. So like obviously these men feel like they're not allowed to be men. Like, that's why when I was texting, I was like, oh, everyone's so cucked. They love it. But yeah, all these film critics, I was thinking about the audience, like, particularly, like, this is not representative of all kinds of guys. This is a specific type of guy. And yeah, that guy probably feels pretty castrated, and it probably felt pretty good from a place inside him that maybe he doesn't even want to exist, that he saw just, like, raw masculinity, you know? Mm-hmm. Because that's been, like, look at the leading men that woke culture gave us, like Timothy. It's like then all these like twinks, and now we need men. We need muscles. We need secondary sex signifiers. You know, like that show us that men and women are different. Like oh no more God. Non-binary. Like
Nicola on feminized. Her alt-right pop pipeline.
No, I'm speaking to what I think the like psyche right. is of these men. Like
yeah.
That's... But yeah, that's like, I think it's like the Me Too thing, like shocked and awed, you know?
Oh yeah, I'm also
sorry,
like
that was
really
a little Iraq throwback, the shock and awe.
I'm also curious, like, in terms of like Ryan Gosling, I'm really like fascinated by, you know, his little career trajectory in relation to like the men that were fans of him, like, for so long. Like, he, you know, he had the rom-coms that, like, women love, but then he went super into, like, very, very masculine roles. And, like, my boyfriend was telling me this, that he is, like, this poster child for these, like, kind of, like, alt-right guys who want masculinity. It's, like, the fast cars and the muscles and all of that. And then for him to go do Barbie movie and, like, you know, the Barbie movie was really controversial among men and, like, some other people who felt that way. And then to go back into action, I'm, like, so curious if, like, the men are just going to pretend Barbie didn't happen, if they've embraced Ken in their own Kenergy, or if, like, they're now like, we don't like you anymore. You're, like, a feminist or whatever. I don't know. I'm, like, so curious if you, like, felt any of that.
Just quick aside, I definitely saw right-wing guys being like on Twitter being like, Ken is proving our point, and they like embraced him as like,
okay,
Ken is like exactly like the cucked man in woke culture that we live in, like he has no authority to himself, and look at how amazing it felt for him to have like some identity to himself because men don't, etc., etc. So there is that element, but Allegra, yeah. You take it.
Yeah, I definitely saw some guys walk in wearing Kenergy hoodies, like the one he wears in Barbie, or like I Am Knuff. There were some guys wearing that. They always like do an intro and then a Q&A. So during the intro, he came up with the director and a bunch of guys were shouting like, Ken, we love you, Ken. So I thought that was, it definitely seems like the guys are still embracing him. But the thing about this movie, so it was like an action movie, The Fall Guy, but it also is very much a rom-com. So the women that I was with were really into it because it's like Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt and their relationship's really sweet and wholesome. And the whole time he's like trying to win her back. And she's a female director, and he's the stunt guy on her movie. And so the whole thing is, like, they're trying to keep her movie going. And she's making, like, a space movie that's going to be at Comic-Con. So she's doing, like, this very masculine kind of thing. But then he's, like, you know, fawning over her and tries to go to karaoke to make her happy because she wants him there. You know, so in that way, it's, like, it's really interesting because he's not really doing a hyper-masculine kind of character, even though he is playing the stunt guy who does go shirtless at some points. So I thought he's, like, playing the field of the women who still like him from the rom-com days. But I also feel like, because I grew up thinking Ryan Gosling was for the girlies, but then I was watching the new season of Love is Blind, which I think we'll talk about later, and there was one guy who was, like, the fan favorite for a while, but then things blew up in his face, where he was saying in the pods his favorite movies were The Notebook. Like, so I was like, okay, so maybe Ryan Gosling, even the Ryan Gosling rom-coms are for the guys. I had never really thought about that, because I thought he was for the people like me. So hearing your boyfriend say he was, like, the dude's ideal is very interesting yeah. to me.
Yeah, like, there have been just, like, so many, I forget which movie it was, maybe it was the one he did with Eva Mendes, his wife and mother of his child, Yeah, it's just very, like, the face tattoos and the cars. Mm-hmm. And, like, apparently there's, like, so many just, like, edits of him. And they, like, worship him. And there's, like, guides on, like, how to be like him and stuff that, like, men are consuming, which is so funny. But it also does make sense, like, those same men that have difficulties with their masculinity watching Barbie and, like, seeing Ken's arc and not seeing it as ironic. They're like, oh, yeah, Ken was being suffocated by Barbie and, like, these women, and, like, she rebelled. It's like, I can totally see them, like, missing the entire point. And, like, you know, Barbie, I don't think super drilled that in at the end either. Like, we see Barbie, like, apologizing to Ken for her part in it, which, you know, whatever. I love the Barbie movie, but the ending, I was like, why do we have to be so nice to him? But that's fine. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I could totally see men just being like, we love Ken. He's our, like, patriarch icon. Like, I don't know.
Oh, that's so interesting to me. One thing, yeah, I mean, I can see that too, because the guys wearing the I Am Knuff hoodies were definitely like, I don't know, I don't want to stereotype them, but it wasn't like, you know, the guys in my real life who I know would have that, which are like my gay male friends or my female friends. Like, it was like, it was the you know, schlubby film critic dudes. So I was like, okay, so it is playing to both sides, all sides, which I thought was interesting. There's also a line in that movie which I thought was interesting, where, so, like, Ryan Gosling, yes, we're saying, like, the men, that's an ideal for them, and I think for a lot of straight women too. Like, you know, I posted a photo of him and a lot of my straight women friends were like, oh my god, jealous that you saw him. And in the movie, even he is like, they're doing an AI scan of him, because that's what they do in Hollywood. And he's like, can you remake me? Like, I don't want to, like, I want to look like Tom Cruise. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Like, that Ryan Gosling would want to look like someone else. Like, that. I was like, oh, men also are insecure that's about so how sweet. They look. I forget that's possible for them.
For sure. Well, like, even in the beginning of, you know, when Barbie first got announced, everyone was like, Ken is too old for this. Like, the photos got released. Like, he got so much heat for the way he looked. They said his hair is too bleached. He was too old. Like, who does he think he is for being Ken? You know, it's like, and that was like a full year before we saw anything about the movie. So, like, people really just did not know what the whole theme of the movie was. So I can imagine that, you know, potentially creating some insecurities for him. I'm curious, though, I guess after attending South By and seeing all of these new films, are there any, like, specific trends you're seeing in movies right now that maybe are, like, reflective of culture, and, like, anything that you can kind of pinpoint to being like, okay, I'm starting to see a lot more of this because mm-hmm. maybe XYZ?
Oh, interesting question. So that was definitely a trend I noticed, where everyone was really excited for these more masculine guys being masculine, like very masculine for the most part. I would say, I guess I'm curious your thoughts. So my favorite movie of the fest was called Babes, and it's the new Alana Glazer movie. She wrote it and stars in it. It's her and Michelle Buteau, and they play best friends. Yeah, it's really funny. It's not crazy, but the whole thing is like, so Michelle Buteau just had her second child, and then Alana Glazer gets knocked up off a one night stand, and then the one night stand ends up dying like the next day, but she decides to keep the baby. And Michelle Buteau is like, I don't think this is a good idea, but I'm going to support you. So I thought that was so interesting, because it's like, there was nobody wanted this woman to have this baby. Literally, the father died. Like, there was no reason for her to have this baby. But I feel like, I don't know if, I feel like I keep seeing movies, or I keep not seeing movies, where women make the choice to not. And I understand, like, the whole movie is about this woman who shouldn't have a baby having a baby. Like, that's part of it. But I just am like, I never see the pregnancy story where they make the choice not to. Like, Michelle Buteau's character, this is her second kid, and she was like, I hate this. I'm miserable. I hate being pregnant. I hate being a mom. but we love it and we do it anyway. And I just think that's so interesting. I feel like that just spoke to me, where it's like I was more wondering why we haven't had a reaction to that. Like, I feel like when I was in high school and Juno was out and 16 and pregnant was a thing, we kind of were starting to be like, oh, maybe pregnancy is bad. Maybe we don't need to always have kids. Like, maybe we can hold off. But now it's just like, you know, nobody was questioning the politics of, like, why this woman was having this child. Like, it was totally cute, happy ending. Have you guys noticed that too? Because it definitely was strange to me, I think, a little bit.
I feel like whenever abortion is depicted, it's always kind of like one scene of like going in and out of a building, basically. Like, it's never really an extended, like, it's never really, extended experience of like the days leading up. There's like they'll depict the panic moment of finding out, and they'll depict like the day of, but I've never really seen a depiction of like how it feels in those days in between, what the actual procedure like that day feels like, the days after feel like. Yeah.
Cause you guys have to watch. There's a movie that's exactly this. It's called Unpregnant. It's with Haley Lou Richardson and Barbie Ferreira. It is so funny. It came out a couple years ago. It's on HBO Max. And it didn't get like a ton of press, but it was so funny. It's basically about these two girls, and like one has to get an abortion, and so they have to drive to another state to do it because like their state doesn't allow it. And it's like their entire road trip journey there, and like the abortion process, and like it's just like two young best friends. Like, they're in like their young 20s, and like, I don't know, that was like the first time I'd seen a film that like was positively depicting someone being like, this is my choice and I'm doing it, and like, that's it, you know what I mean? And so I do kind of hope we see more films in the future that show all of the different options and different choices, you know? But yeah, I did think this movie like did a good job, if anyone wants to check that out.
Yeah, I remember watching...
Was it just very like...
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to ask, was the tone of it like just very positive, or were they like conflicted at all?
It was really funny. It's basically like her... I mean, obviously in the beginning, she's like freaking out, and she's like, we have to go. And so she goes to her best friend, and she's like, we need to leave like tonight. My parents can't know. They're out of town. And then they go on this road trip and adventure. It's very like Thelma and Louise, like keep getting themselves into like sticky situations along the way, and they have to leave and like keep going. And like, even in one scene, they like accidentally, like someone finds out that they're trying to get an abortion. Like, the super like anti-abortion, like super religious family is like trying to like trap them, and like it's just like a very like funny adventurous story. And then like it has those like emotional elements too, but like it's really just about their friendship and like girlhood. And like, yeah, I thought that was very sweet.
I remember that movie coming out, and I saw there was this other movie that's sort of similar on Hulu, and I cannot remember what it was called, but it was like they weren't trying to get an abortion, they were trying to get Plan B, I think. And they were in a state where, like, either it wasn't legal. I think you had to, they were like 17 and you had to be 18 unless without a parent, and they didn't want to ask their parents. So then it was sort of similar. They had to drive across state lines. And that was also like fun, but it was also still like political and kind of dark, where it's like you can't even get Plan B. So it was like,
yeah,
this is stressful, is this worth it, that sort of thing. I do feel like there was like that period where we were having these kinds of movies where it was like abortion was actually an option, but then here at South by, everything just felt very like hetero or just like nuclear. Like, everyone was just like in a nuclear family, or they were like of two straight parents and they were straight. Even the queer movie I saw, which was called Backspot, about queer cheerleaders, felt really like straight to me too. It was like very conventionally attractive women who are gay, but like, you know, come from straight parents, and like everything about them was very like anodyne. Like, I just felt like things were very, a lot of the movies I saw felt like they could have come out 10 years ago or whatever, like on a political level. Yeah. Which they were still good, but I was just like, why are none of these movies starring gay people except the one that's like being advertised as the queer drama because they're lesbians and they are cheerleaders and they kiss, like,
yeah.
It was interesting.
I feel like a really big theme, I think, is happening everywhere in, like, TV, film, social media, all of it, and, like, marketing. It's, everyone is so focused on, like, mass appeal. Like, they have to make sure that it is so, like, heteronormative and very, like, oh, anyone in the middle of America can watch this because, like, I don't know, very, like, The Bachelor coded. Like, everyone can consume this so that it blows up. Otherwise, we don't want to invest into it and we don't want to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like... Nicola?
It's very risk-averse. It's like no one wants to take chances. And it feels like... That kind of feels very, like, recession era to me. Like, we don't have the budget to, like... to take a chance. Like, it feels like everyone wants to go the safe route with everything, like you're saying. Like, we need to do whatever is going to have the highest chance of success because we can't risk it. And it's like, that's a bummer place to be for everyone, because it means we don't get anything creative or new, and we're stuck, you know? We just get stuck with, like, more of the same, more of the same, more of the same, more of the same. And it's so uninspiring and lame to live this way. I want more for us.
And it's very, like, we kind of touched on this before, but, like, Love is Blind, it's, like, that show blows up every single year. It's so huge, and it makes sense because it's, like, these young people being, like, I want to get married no matter what. I am getting that ring on my finger and whatever, and, like, the drama that comes with that, and, like... It's so crazy to see that correlation. Like, that is, like, what sells, because, like, so many people can relate to that aren't, like, in maybe metropolitan cities and whatnot. So, I feel like there's so much just, like, I don't know. And I think so much of it is also tied to, like, all of this abortion ban and politics stuff. It's, like, I also don't feel like that's a coincidence that we're getting so much, like, marriage and baby media, you know? Mm-hmm.
And what was like interesting to me about that sort of divide, because I totally agree, I do feel like, especially marriage culture, for sure, I think marriage is like a thing we're really invested in watching that is really interesting to me. But the movies that were about queer people were advertised that way, like Tommy Dorfman, who is like Lena Dunham's best friend, I don't even know how else to describe her, but and kind of an influencer, like she came out as trans, and she had her first movie there, like she wrote and directed it, and it's about a non-binary person like coming out to their parents. So like that was, the movie was about being non-binary and coming out, like very traditional story. There was the queer cheerleading movie I saw, which was advertised as the queer cheerleading movie. And then there was another movie that was advertised as the gay Indian rom-com that was about a gay Indian man reconciling with dating another gay white man. So it was like a culture clash, but also like very much about their sexuality. And I just am like, it just feels so... like there hasn't been as much movement as I thought there would be in terms of like the heteronormativity, where... all the movies I saw about queer people or really read about queer people were about them being queer. I just thought that was really interesting. Mm. And then the straight people movies were like, they were having babies or they were crushing on a boy, crushing on a girl. It was very like this, nothing has changed here. Like, you know, it's cool that Tommy Dorfman has a movie here. Like she's a trans person and she has a movie she wrote and directed, but it's about a non-binary kid coming out. Like, you know, it's just there wasn't anything more exciting about these things beyond like the sexuality part of it, and then the hetero ones were just very like traditional. So it's very, I don't know where progress is going to be.
I remember someone explaining like with the woke, like I guess I feel like it was like the 2020, like George Floyd, COVID, everyone having time at home to reflect, that a lot of things changed like very quickly. But I remember someone reflecting on like social change. There's often like a huge burst of momentum forward, but then it kind of like tapers backwards immediately after. And like, it's not that there's no progress, but it's like a two steps forward, one step back. And they were comparing it to the civil rights movements of the 1960s and like talking about how much action and interest and protesting whatever was happening at the time, but like look at how much of the demands that were being made then, or the women's movement in the 70s or something, like those demands still hadn't been met, but at the time it felt like a lot was happening and there was a lot of change happening, but then it kind of like two steps forward, one step back. It's like you get a little, but you don't get as much as you thought you were gonna get. So it, this like them saying that, it definitely stuck with me, and it kind of feels like that's what's happened, where it's like a couple of years ago, everything, it was like the identity Olympics. You had to check like all the boxes. You had to be as oppressed as possible, like to make anything or be seen anywhere or whatever. Like, and now it's like, we're just gonna like close all, forget about that. We're two
just gonna
spots
bring
open.
Ryan Gosling back.
Yeah, and like we're just gonna, it's gonna be fine, like it's back in fashion, like there's some buzz because all the big fashion brands have gone back to being all white male designers, where there was a moment where there was like some female designers, some non-white designers, and now it's just back to like every single major, you know, Burberry level, like Chanel level brand. It's like,
yeah,
or whatever,
because people aren't actually like on a mass level desiring that from like content. Like I feel like I see this so much even in like marketing meetings. They're like, okay, how are we gonna put diversity into this campaign so we don't get canceled? It's like, it's not coming from the angle of like, oh, we want diverse stories, we want to be like this change, we want a movie that's going to share different perspectives of different people. It's like they didn't feel that way, so when there's no social pressure to fulfill that, they're like, oh great, like cool, let's go back to like what we quote unquote actually wanted to do, you know what I mean?
It's literally like fear-based versus love-based. It's like you're doing fear-based yes. diversity, not love-based diversity.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's so interesting, and it's like I find it disappointing, but then as you know, as we were talking about like how the things I cover at work, like it isn't surprising. Like it's disappointing and it's unsurprising, and I feel like I'm only just recognizing it, that we've gone back to exactly where, you know, sort of where we were. Like, as you said, two steps forward, one step back, of like, these things do exist now. Like, there are these movies here, but they aren't the headlining movies, and they aren't really about things other than, you know, yeah. I am this identity, which still... You know, when are we going to move forward from that? That is definitely true. It's like not as much has changed as I thought it did.
Okay, yeah. But my hope core take, though, is that we do have so much amazing independent media now that you don't need to, like, watch Hollywood movies. Like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You don't have to watch that anymore. Like, you can find, like, amazing, like, independent, like there's so many different subscriptions, like there's actually still movie theaters that do this programming, like in the cities that we live in, and mid-sized cities too, like even in Tucson there's like two different independent movie theaters, like, and there's so many different people making long form content on YouTube that is smart and interesting, like so many podcasts, like I feel like it's so easy to step outside the bubble of mainstream, and like there's so much choice, and you can really like fill yourself up with like whatever you want to, and I think that's a unique and cool part of our time, that so many people are making so much like high quality, interesting, unique content that you don't have to like even watch Hollywood movies, like who cares.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good hope core take. I'm going to steal hope core. That's right. That's like
I didn't make that up. I don't know. That was like a year ago or two. It was like that era where everything was a core and hope core was, or no, hope punk. That's what it was. Hope punk. Hope punk. I think.
Hope
I don't
punk.
Know.
I love
but,
that.
Yeah. Hope core.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting too. I think like, I don't know. I think not to talk about the Barbie movie forever, but I feel like it was such like a like cultural moment. That movie was a huge reminder that we're actually not as progressed as maybe it feels when we're in like the queer community or like, you know, metropolitan cities, etc. It feels like things are so progressed, but then I like made kind of like a movie review hot take TikTok and Instagram reel that like went really, really viral on both TikTok and Instagram. And the comments that I got from these men, they don't even acknowledge that the patriarchy even exists. They're like, the patriarchy isn't real. There's no inequality. And I was like, that was the first time in so long I was like, oh, wow. We are actually on, we're not even on different pages. We're in different books right now, you know? and for the Barbie movie to be like radical made me realize like, okay, like maybe it is still like a huge deal that like there's even a movie with gay cheerleaders. We're like, fuck it, fine. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. It's just like, I don't know. It's just, it was a huge reminder that like, I don't know, the communities that we exist in are just so not reflective of where the rest of the country is like at all, you know?
That's so true. Wow. That's scary, honestly. Being confronted with that kind of thing is scary, but it does remind me of we Horrible. Live in a bubble. Ugh, I'm sorry, but I guess, yeah, good learning lesson.
For sure. I mean, it was just so crazy being like, wow. Like, it was definitely a big, like, wake-up call being like, this is the state that so many people are still in. And obviously, it was, like, 90% men. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, we all know that men are just getting, like, more red-pilled every single day. anyway, to pivot, are there any good TV shows you are watching right now that you... I know we kind of touched on Love is Blind. I don't know if we'd call that a good TV show, but it is a TV show that I have personally been consuming. But I'd love to hear if there's anything else kind of on your mind.
Yeah, any scripted TV shows you've liked?
So Girls 5 Eva just came back. Do you guys, have you seen that show?
No, I don't know what's that.
Oh, it's so good. Okay, so it is from like the same like 30 Rock, Kimmy Schmidt family, like Tina Fey is a producer. Mm-hmm. And it's like created by someone who was a writer on Kimmy Schmidt. And it was on Peacock for 2 seasons.
I love Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah. So it was on Peacock, which is why no one has seen it. And they canceled it. Okay. Well, you didn't watch it, Nicola. You missed it. well, it got canceled because you Nicole.
Didn't watch it. Because I'm always going to that Housewives play next episode.
Exactly, exactly. but it got canceled in 2022, I think. And then Netflix revived it. So they just brought it back, like, this week for season 3. And it's about a girl group that broke up when they were, like, in their 20s. And now they're all older moms in their 40s. And they're trying to recapture their glory days. They, like, reunite because... they're like Girls 5 Eva. There were 5 of them, but the 5th one had died, and that was sort of part of why they broke up. But now they're trying to recapture the glory, and it's extremely funny because they're each like a crazy character. It's Busy Phillips, Sarah Bareilles, who's very funny, Paula Pell, who
I love her. I think,
yeah, Paula Pell, and then Renee Ellis Goldsberry, who was in Hamilton. And they're all, I mean, great music, but so funny and like dumb, like they're all really dumb in different ways. Busy Phillips is so funny. She's just always doing one-liners because her character is a total airhead. Like, she's married to a gay man and does not realize he's gay for like 2 seasons, which is so funny. So this season they're like on tour trying to get some new fans because they're gonna play Radio City. They somehow booked Radio City Music Hall on Thanksgiving during the parade, and they have to sell out Radio City. So they're trying to make fans. But it's so funny. It's like basically like a live action
cartoon.
What's it on now? It's on Netflix now. So everyone can see it now.
Okay, great.
Yeah, definitely would recommend. That it just came great. Back. I think you guys would like it. It's really funny. It's like making fun of, like, you know, early 2000s culture, because they were like that kind of girl band on like TRL and stuff. So it's just, it's very silly. And yeah. Big fan. Just comforting.
I'm so here for like more media about just like girlhood. I feel like the show Girls has been having such a big resurgence recently because, you know, everyone's been like rewatching it and stuff. And it's, yeah, it's nice to have a show that's not focused on like, you know, romantic relationships. You get a little break from that to be able to watch just like girls being girls and like the comedy of that. I feel like that is like something we're needing like right now in media. At least I am desiring.
I've been doing a slow Girls rewatch, and it, oh my god, Lena Dunham
so good.
Absolutely brought back from the dead. I'm so glad that she's getting the love she deserves. She, like, such a prophet with so many of the things she's critiquing, like, in her characters. And the lot, like, oh my god, the writing is so good. Like,
so good.
I just like, it's just like, it's like watching Sopranos where you're like, this is just masterful. Like, you're like, this is just unbelievable. Like, and I'm watching it with this distance. It's like, wow, she saw things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still think about
like,
that show.
Shoshana basically
all the time.
Has influencer voice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, Shoshana predicted.
Show. Yeah.
Shoshana is a TikTok, like, she's an annoying fucking TikTok girl, like, influencer type girl. Like, and she's, like, so insecure and obsessed with her image and all that. Like, she was, like, the proto, like, influencer type girl.
Yeah.
Annoying I thought I heard that Lena Dunham was writing something else, or that something was coming out. Do either of you know anything about that?
Yeah, she's doing a Netflix show, I think. Actually, like a Netflix comedy. Yeah. So that will be good. Yeah, I think about Girls all the time. That's another show that ends in a pregnancy that shouldn't have happened, interestingly.
Dude, thank you.
Right?
That plot line, when I rewatch it, I can't watch like that last season. It's just like so, and maybe that's what they're trying to say, like, you know, she was so hopeful. She was this writer. She was like, I'm going to make it big. And, like, that just, you know, doesn't necessarily happen for everybody. But, oh, my God, was that so hard to watch. And maybe that's just reality, and that's why it's hard to watch. But made me really sad.
Yeah. That final episode was so frustrating. Just her and Marnie decamping with her babies. Yeah. Great show other than that last half of that season. I still think of I love the bear, and I still think of Richie and the bear. I call him Desi from Girls. Like, I always will say Desi from Girls.
Yes.
Marnie from Girls. That's Jessa. Like, they're all those characters for me forever.
Oh yeah, Jessa.
Mm-hmm.
Jessa Kirk.
I love her.
She's wild. That
she
show
really
was a documentary. It was a documentary, honestly.
It was.
The way that, like, and then I think they did some interviews where Jessa, like, either Lena was, like, directly writing about Jessa's life, or Jessa was, like, improvising, like, so much of, like, the lines, and then, like, that's what ended up making it. We're like, that is her. I love it.
Yeah. So good.
How did you feel about, kind of the way that scripted TV is going? This is something I was like very curious to get your take on. I feel like a lot of new scripted TV shows, if they're not done well, I feel like they've tried to be like quote unquote woke, but they overdo it. We saw this in like the Just Like That, Sex and the City reboot. We saw that in the Gossip Girl reboot. We're kind of seeing, like, a lot of these reboots that just kind of, like, flop because these writers maybe don't know how to exist in today's world, if that makes sense. And I do feel like, I don't know, I've had a hard time with, like, new shows. I feel like that's why people are going back and watching a lot of old shows, because it doesn't feel like, to me, in my opinion, that people know how to, quote-unquote, not be offensive, but, like, they weren't going to be offensive. They just maybe feel a lot of pressure to to be a certain way. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And just like that example is especially funny because they introduced Che as the, like, and they're like the non-binary character and everyone hated them so much and now they're rewritten off the show. I feel like that's, like, you gotta just stick with it if you're gonna make this character and this, like,
agreed.
Point, you know? Like, yeah. They just rewrote them off. Like, that's crazy to me. I feel like there aren't a lot of...
I don't know why they didn't like Che.
I think it's like Miranda cheated on her husband, right?
But it's also like Che is just so much. Like,
yeah.
Che is like checking so many boxes at once, and I think that it's just like. I don't know. Like, Che just had too much of a recipe for being able to be bullied by people online.
Yeah, that's true.
I agree. And I think there will be redemption for Che. I think Che is going to have a Lena style, like, arc where I think that, like, give it a couple years and people are going to start, first they'll be, like, ironically liking Che, and then they will be earnestly, like, I'm trying to think what the future, like, word for slay is going to be. They're like, Che. They're going to be, like, all about Che.
Mm-hmm. I also find it so funny. This is like a TV thing that's like a pet peeve, but also so fucking funny to me. Where like a character like Che, when they're a stand-up comedian, and then they're writing the stand-up for this comedian, and the stand-up is so bad. So I think you like lose respect for the character. And I'm like, why not just like consult like an actual stand-up comedian, get like one funny, like really good joke so that you actually respect this character. But then, you know, the joke they did, they're like, yeah, LA's driving so much, I'm Ubering to my kitchen. It's like, dude. Like, I feel like that contributed to the downfall a lot.
Yeah, just like adding nothing of value. But then it sucks because it's like you have this non-binary character, like, you know, but then you ruined it. Like, they just were not a good character. But yeah, I feel like the thing I'm hurting for on the TV front, which maybe is related, is like a good show about teens. Like, we have Euphoria, but I don't think that's a good show about teens. They're not really teens. It's not really like, I need the, like, Degrassi. There was this show, Never Have I Ever, on Netflix that I thought was really good, but I feel like that there's a big hole there and nothing is doing a good job of filling it. And a lot of shows are like maybe trying, as you guys are saying, like checking those boxes and failing. And then it's just more about like creating these archetypes and not actually like making anything meaningful of it. And so I feel like a lot of shows are just like either flopping after one season or aren't really sticking around. A lot of the good shows are ending or just ended. So I feel like we're in this weird space where it's like, I don't really know what the next big season two is going to be. Like, I can't really think of what show is on that's like, oh, season two is going to be so good. Other than like, you know, there's The Bear and The White Lotus. Like, those have stuck through.
Yeah. But
I feel like they are kind of the only ones, really. Like, those are great. But not finding a lot else right now. I'm watching a lot of YouTube instead, honestly.
I feel like we need comedy. Like, we haven't had a good age of comedy in so long. Like, we need, like, yeah, like, the 30 Rock universe that expanded into, like, so many different shows. Like, we need a new era of that where it's just, like, fucking funny 30-minute shows. Like, I feel like I Think You Can Leave was kind of the most recent sort of, like, comedy show that that, like, people really just liked. And it was just, like, universally, like, well-liked.
Yeah, that show's really funny. Yeah. I like Girls 5
Eva
for that.
So maybe there will be
more,
like, sketch shows. Yeah.
I think it's also, like... I think this was also a huge thing with, like, the writer's strike. I think the reason why some of these new shows aren't hitting... Like, I think someone was tweeting about this. They're like, oh, now I understand why it feels like this episode was written in a day, because it was written in a day. Like, I feel like back in the day, like, there was, like, career writers, you know? They were writing on the show. Even, like, Modern Family, I think of. Like, that was such a great show to me. Like, they had these writers on for years and years, and that was their whole life. And it's like, now these writers don't have enough time to make it, like, actually quality because they're spread so thin, they're not getting paid enough. So I really do hope we see some changes after the writer's strike, because I think that is, like, a maybe could be a big element on why it's just not hitting. It's like they don't have the environment to actually create the show that we used to watch, you know?
I heard a seasoned TV writer on a podcast talking about, like, then versus now, and one thing that he was saying is he's like, there is no time for mentorship, and he's like, I was able to spend time with people who taught me things, and they were taught things by people who were whatever. Like, he was like, there's no culture of mentorship at all anymore, and he's like, and writers don't get to spend time on set, and that is so important to better mm-hmm. your writing. But how, like, the new, like, writing rooms and micro rooms and punch-up rooms, or, like, however that is, he's like, those were two things he said that he's like, the skill isn't, like, the craft isn't being honed because, like, this time isn't profitable, like, for mentorship and on-time set time for writers, but it's so important for becoming better. And, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, especially for, I think, comedy. Like, so I talked to the creator of Girls Five Eva recently. I got to, like, interview her at a festival. Nice. Yeah, and so she started out, she, like, studied art or painting or something in school, and then just was, like, a comedy fan, and then just was able to sort of get small jobs. Like, she wrote for, like, cartoons for a little bit, and through there she moved to, like, late night. So she was, like, in all of these rooms for a long time. Like, she worked on Letterman, I think, for, like, six or seven years. So she was able to, like, be in a room that's consistent. Like, that's one of the most consistent kinds of shows you can be on, and really learn how to do one-liners. And then from there, she was able to move to Kimmy Schmidt, where it's streaming, so I feel like streaming's a little bit different, but that was a show where it was with people who had done the sitcom thing, like all these SNL people in Tina Fey. And then from there, she was able to feel confident and, like, know how to do her own show, like, show run. And I thought that was so interesting because I don't think those opportunities really exist anymore. Yeah, like, there obviously are people who still write for late night, like, that's still a thing, but those are so few and far between versus when she was doing it. Like, she wrote for a late night show, but there were so many other options too. Like, she then could work with people who were on long running sitcoms. Like, there are so many people that she could meet and learn from and learn how to do different kinds of joke writing. And I feel like now my friends that I've talked to as well, like, they sort of just join onto a project that might not even ever see the light of day, and it was only for 6 episodes anyway. And then you're going to try another one that's only 6 episodes. Who knows if it's going to air? So it definitely doesn't help you learn how to be a better comedy writer when it's for such a short period of time with other people trying to fight for those very small number of spaces. And the people who are really successful aren't going to be working on those shows usually. They have their own projects. So it does seem hard. It seems hard and rare for newer people to get in there and learn.
Yeah, it seems like in this era of, like, everything being, like, startup mindset, everything being, like, lean and everyone working for themselves, like, we don't have a lot of mentorship or, like, elders to learn from in general, and that is, like, not good. Like, that's a huge, I guess, kind of circling back to the beginning of our conversation, like, throughout my career, I've mostly been, like, an island of one. Like, either I've been a department of one, or I've been the only person doing a certain job, and I haven't really had a lot of professional, like, it's been a lot of just, like, figuring it out, you know, and, like, doing my best just by, like, looking what's around and, like, trying to mimic it, you know, and not getting a ton of, like, real guidance. And that's something that, like, I wish that I had been, like, in-house, like, with editors and stuff more, because, yeah, like, it's nice to have other people show you the way, because figuring it out, like, winging it, like, kind of sucks. Like, it's cool in some ways, but it kind of just sucks in other ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So winging I'm it curious. Culture. I'm curious if we want to touch on any of the. Nicola, you mentioned some little hot topics in the beginning. Did we want to kind of wrap up with some overall thoughts on that, or how are you feeling about that?
Oh, I feel like we could wrap it up. Do we want to just quickly, very quick take? I do feel like it was impossible to not see the Kate Middleton pictures and the fallout and memes and the, like, whatever. Quick round table, Jazz, what were you seeing on that this week? What was hitting your feed?
It's just, I mean, my entire feed is like conspiracy theories, and it's a lot of like joking, it's a lot of humor, and I'm just curious. I don't know why this feels this is gonna sound insane. This kind of reminds me of the submarine era on social media when there were so many memes, so many jokes were like, but we don't know if this person's alive or not, so it feels kind of dark to be memeifying. So, like, obviously we have no idea, you know, there's speculation that, like, she's going dark as, like, leverage because her William is having an affair, et cetera, et cetera. But other people are like, she could have died. She could be dead right now. We don't know. And so I think I've had a hard time, like, no pun intended, stomaching some of the jokes and the memes with all of this, because I'm like, dude, we don't know. So yeah, that's where my head's at.
Allegra.
Yeah, I'm sort of on that page too. You meant that pun, girl. You meant that pun. It's stomaching. That pun was intended. That got me, though. Yeah. I'm on the same page. Like, at first, before the photos, I was like, okay, she probably, like, I've had surgery. Like, I didn't take 3 months to recover, but it's intense. Abdominal surgery is intense. Anything over in that area. So I was like, you know, leave her alone. She's probably just recovering or taking steroids or something and doesn't want to be photographed. But then when they posted that photo without the engagement ring on and also clearly doctored and then walked it back with a really dumb statement of how, like, I'm an amateur photographer and I want to edit my photos. It's like, you did not take that photo. And when have you ever posted to your own social media? Like, you have a staff. And then I'm seeing all these other things about how her staff hasn't seen her. Like, they were, their friends were shocked by the photo. I'm starting to buy the divorce theory, but I'm fascinated by any conspiracy theory now. But I do feel kind of gross about it because, like, if she is very legitimately ill, this is going to end badly and we're all going to feel bad. But it is delicious to watch. And I fully subscribe. Like, I fully subscribe to the divorce theory right now. I think that she's trying to get that divorce rolling.
Damn. But so many people feel like she wants to be queen, like, more than anything, you know? And so I'm curious, like, if she's like, I'll stay in a loveless marriage, but I'm keeping that title. I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, Nicola, go ahead.
I feel like I'm a peon and I'll never know the truth. And so I don't expect to ever know the truth. So, anything could be true. I just think it's absolutely wild that the AP killed an image that was issued by the palace. That has got to be unprecedented, and that the palace is basically engaging in deepfakes. That's crazy. Honestly wild to me. I need a one-act play about, like, the decision-making of killing the image, because you know that was, like, a heated discussion of, like, we can't kill an image from the palace. Like, what is that? Like, that is, like, dangerous territory. Like, you're going to fuck up your relationship with the palace. The palace is going to be furious. And, like, I need to know, like, what... I need to know, like, the heat in the room at the AP when they were, like, deciding this. But apparently they will kill an image if there's, like, a red eye correction. Like, they have really stringent rules. But still, I was shocked by that. But I mean, who knows? We'll never know. I'll never know the truth.
Yeah, speaking of, like, just, the crown, and speaking of, like, TV, everyone's like, the crown season writers are, like, going for it now. Like, that's
the Crown,
the best TV promo you can get.
Okay, and like, the Crown is propaganda, right? Like, 100%. That's to make Americans interested in the royal family, 100%, right? Because they
work too much of it.
Closely with the palace, like, it's flattering on purpose. Like, there's things, don't they work with them? Like, it's not like some kind
of... So much Diana, like, stuff. I mean, I haven't seen it that much, but, like,
I think it's,
would they have, like, endorsed
propaganda funded by the palace to make to make the royals interesting to Americans, because they want to still be funded by British tax dollars because they're increasingly less and less relevant. So they're like, we're going to go the entertainment route, and we're going to go the American entertainment route because America's powerful like that with culture.
They just need the Real Housewives of Buckingham Palace, and then they're good to go.
I wish. There is Ladies of London. But yeah, it's not good enough. But yeah, the royals, the royal family, watch out for them. They're powerful. They'll get you.
I like that they're sort of getting. I like that they're sort of getting their comeuppance. Like, it's very funny that after the Queen died, like, immediately things spiraled out of control, and even her dying was, like, out of control when they, like, leaked it from Edward Enfield's wedding or whatever. So it's just, like, so funny that they're all screwing that up so fast, but. I hope Kate's fine, but I love seeing the monarchy kind of dissolve because they're all just bumbling and bad with media.
Yeah. I know. We'll see what happens. So pray for Kate. Pray for the children.
Yeah. God. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. This has been such a fun conversation. I think everyone has been thinking about, like, TV a lot. It's been, like, a big couple years for media and television, so this was very fun. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
If people want to find you, where should they go?
Don't look too closely for me, but you can find me on... Don't be searching me too hard. I have some new photos I saw on Google Images of myself, and I really don't like that, so please don't Google me. But you can find me...
From Southside?
Oh, God. From, like, this other event I did, and I don't like it. I don't like it. But I am
on... Gotta get AP to kill the story.
Yeah. I'm on Twitter at LegsFrank. So you can find me on Twitter. I'm pretty funny on Twitter, I think. So that's really the best place to find me. And thedailybeast.com. Go look for my byline on Obsessed. That would make me happy.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you all for listening. Consider sending us some money. Goodbye.
Or just 5 stars. That's fine, too. 4 stars.
Whatever. Okay, the end.
Bye.